Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, it's Monday, the day after Father's Day, and my next guest, Alex Hollings, he from Soft Rep, former Marine non-commissioned officer. Now he's a big-time writer, and he's also being involved in broadcast journalism now, so we'll talk about that. But Father's Day, a little bit different. You lost your father in the last couple months, and but you're a legit father now. And so, happy Father's Day.
Thanks, man. You too. I will admit it was weird, this being my first year, celebrating Father's Day. Because in my mind, Father's Day has always been a holiday about my dad.
Right.
I just had a baby a little less than 7 months ago. So I'm still fairly new to the dad gig, And it was a bittersweet one, but my wife made it an incredible day. I was working throughout most of it, but I work from home, so I was still spending time with my wife and my daughter. It was a good day. How was yours, man?
Three of my four kids are here, the other one on the East Coast, so it was good. It was good. I mentioned this last week. I went to a funeral for a company commander at Quezon, He left a letter for his family in a place where he knew they would find it, and I loved the sentiment, and I toyed with writing my kids a letter on Father's Day, but in the letter, and now mind you, he's already dead, and they're finding the letter. He wrote this: "None of us knows what the future holds relative to the afterlife, comma. But for me, heaven was being here with you." And I think that is one of the coolest things I've ever heard. And his name is Ken Pipes, and he was a company commander at Quezon, and he was a leader there. He's a leader in the rest of his life. And even in death, he reaches back and hugs and reassures his family and tells them how much he loved them and how much they meant to him. I just think it's the coolest thing. So I toyed about writing that letter to my kids, and then I thought, they'll get freaked out or something like that. And so I'll find a different way to do it. But I love, I love that sentiment, and so for me, being a dad is probably the coolest thing, right? That I've ever done in my life. These little humanoids are half you. They listen to you because they have to, and you see them from the time they come out of the birth canal, and then their scuffle through life and their setbacks, and you're their coach and their dad, and they only have one dad. And so I think it's awesome. I think it's the most favorite thing I do. I love coaching my kids. I love it. So just being here with them, hanging out was fun. And so,
It's so true, man. I tell my wife all the time, in my life, I've been lucky enough to accomplish a lot of the things that I've set my mind to, and more often than not, once you get there, when you reach that mountaintop that you've been working towards, a lot of times it's disappointing. First, you want to finish, let's say, boot camp. You want to become a Marine, or you want to finish undergrad, or, I went to grad school, climbing mountains, whatever it might be. You get there, and you finished it, and you're like, oh, well, I still feel like I did before. There's some accomplishments there, maybe, but I'm still the same guy, as I go home. Having a baby is the first time in my life that not only lived up to expectations, but it exceeded it. This awesome little, I call her a bean because she was the size of a bean before. But this awesome little bean is like working stuff out and learning right in front of me.
Right.
And every once in a while, I'll see glimmers of my dad, in her eyes. She's got my dad's eyes, and I see glimmers of, my wife's mother who passed away a few years ago. And it's amazing in a way that makes me suddenly understand all those guys who I would roll my eyes when they were like, oh, you won't believe it. It's crazier than you think it is. And I was like, how could it be crazier than I think? I get it. You know, there's a little person, you made it, that's awesome. But then when it really is your kid, it changes everything. It's awesome. Being a dad's the coolest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. No, it is. And, you know, the thing I love the most is when they fail, right, and they have to they have to learn, and then they overcome it. And you see that moment where something that was in doubt, that they weren't sure that they could do, they crush. And you know them because, like I said, you've been hanging out with them since they came out of the birth canal. So you know the little criminals, right? And you know what's going through their head. And, you know, and it's so, we were talking yesterday, my number two son was up to bat in a state baseball playoff. And I was the head coach of the team, of his high school team. There's the tying and go-ahead run on base, on second and third. He's up with two outs in the last inning. And I'm like, oh man, my kid's gonna make the last out. This is gonna suck, right? And
the kid, pressure is on.
Oh my god. And the kid pitching is a stud. He's a straight up stud. Went to a D1 school on baseball scholarship, and he throws the ball really hard, and he's got this curveball from hell, right? So first pitch, he throws this curveball that like drops off the table, and I'm like, oh shit. Next pitch is a fastball, and I thought, and Patrick swung and missed, and I'm like, and I know Patrick, right? He has this thing about, I've got a black cloud that follows me, right? So I can only imagine what's going on in his head. The next pitch, he hits a double in the gap, and both runs scores, and I had tears in my eyes. I'm the coach of the team. I have tears in my eyes. That's because my dad is overtaking the coach, right? So then I had to get my shit together, stuff the dad back. You know, my daughter, who's now 24, she did this one person review, in a performing arts thing during the summer that they do for high school kids where we used to live up in North Dakota. It is one of the coolest things because they teach teamwork, discipline, respect in the arts, and they turn nobody away. It's a program called Summer Performing Arts. And if you're a kid that can't act and you want to be a part of it, you're going to be part of the crew. Okay? You're going to build sets, you're going to move spotlights, you're going to do audio, we're going to find a place for you. But that's just to make you part of the team, and then the underpinning is respect, discipline, teamwork. I'm like, I'm a fan of it. I'm like, I hate the arts.
Yeah, that's all the elements, in my opinion, of a successful adult.
Right, right. And, but it's what we teach in team sports. It's what we grew up learning in athletics as kids. And here's all these other kids. And then there's an element in that program. They turn nobody away. Nobody gets cut. We'll find a place for you. That's not the easiest kind of program to run. But she did this review where she played like four characters and there's other girls around her. And we went and we watched it. And I was like, that's Catherine? Like, what the hell? What happened? You know, and you see them do these breakthroughs, and my youngest started, she started swimming this year. She could barely dog paddle, right? And this coach says, hey, why don't you come out for the swim team? I'm like, yeah. Do they swim with inner tubes now, Colleen? Like, how are you going to? So she
that sounds
says,
like me.
She said, so then like 2 weeks into it, she says, you know, Dad, he said I wasn't going to swim in a meet, but I'm going to be part of the JV relay. I'm going to do the breaststroke. I'm like, what? She's like, yep. You know, and just so you see these things that they don't know that they can do to me. And then through the things that I think we coach, which are what? Hard work and dedication. You can do it, but you gotta put in the effort. Alright, if you don't put in the effort, it ain't gonna happen. But I promise you, if you do, you'll do it. And then you see it, and you see that connection happen between hard work and achievement, and then as a parent, you don't have to teach that a second time. You know you can do it. And so I just,
absolutely.
You know, I if you can't tell, I like parenting. I like being a dad. So it's cool. Yesterday was cool.
See, this is what I can't wait for. My baby is on the verge of crawling. You know, she's like right on the, she's just mobile enough to be dangerous, but not mobile enough to do it intentionally, you know? But I get to watch her every day. Literally, she'll go to sleep for a nap and she'll wake up with a new skill set. You know? It's the craziest thing. She'll fall asleep not able to roll over, and she'll wake up 2 hours later and she can roll over back and forth. It's the craziest thing to watch this little person become a person. I can't wait until she's old enough for me to be coaching playing sports, or if she doesn't like sports, I'll have to learn how to do something. I'm going to have to be involved somehow, but Lord knows music is not my skill set, so maybe hopefully her mom can help her with that.
Well, you know what, that's why that arts program was so good, because and I had these guys, I was doing a radio show up there, and I had these guys on my show, and I must have had them on my program over the years hundreds of times, because I was such a fan of what they did. I mean, it was huge what these guys, and they were teachers, and so they wanted to put a summer program together, and they were all involved, the teachers were involved in the arts and music and theater, and so that's what they did. They put on musicals, they put on dramas, and they start with kids, I want to say in second grade. And they do this all throughout the community. And so, because my oldest daughter, Catherine, she's playing soccer, right? So it's like, hey, we're going to go watch Colleen play soccer. And you're like, okay. So Catherine is just as happy eating oranges and sunflower seeds, sitting with her friends on the sideline, as she is playing the game. In fact, she might be happier sitting there doing that than playing the game. So she's doing that, and her coach, and we're kind of standing down, and her coach looks down and says, Catherine, do you want to go in the game? And Catherine looks up and says, something I'd never heard in my life before, do you want me to? And I remember looking at my ex-wife and saying, oh my God, I've never heard that in my life. The appropriate response is, yes, coach, right? Like,
yeah.
Do you want me to?
I'll give her this, though. And she knows herself. You know what I mean?
My ex-wife started laughing, and she said, look, she's having fun. It's girls' sports. They're different, okay? And I was like, oh, my God. And she said, there's a lot of pressure trying not to get hit in the face in a soccer game, okay? Do you understand that? And I said, no. Like, what do you mean get hit in the face? Come on, who gets hit in the face? You move your face. She's like, you don't understand. I'm like, I don't. But I still laugh to this day. Do you want me to? And I'm like, oh my God. So, so it's hilarious. And I'll tell you what, kids are funny. They grow up in your home, and you know, they learn you, they learn your wife, and they say funny things, and Father's Day is a celebration of kids and your relationship. I think it's cool as hell. I want to talk old man fitness here for a few minutes before we go on to other things. Do you have an opinion about supplements, vitamins, and all these other supplements that, you know, these different muscle milk powders and things like that, that are all over? And if you go on any Marine Corps installation, this stuff gets sold, you know, by the ton there. Your thoughts on that stuff?
I could rant and rave. This is the thing about the supplement market. You know, and this is coming from a guy, I'm not anti-supplement. I take supplements now. When I was on active duty in my 20s especially, I was that dude at the gym with like a duffel bag full of just tubs of shit that said extreme testosterone X and stuff all over it, just figuring one of them will work, you know? I mean, we've talked about it before. I was 150 pounds as a private first class.
Yeah.
I walk around at like 240 now. Yeah, I was like, I didn't hit puberty until I was like 28, I think. But, you know, so I was, the reason why I'm a bigger guy now is through no means other than just more than a decade of lifting. You know, I mean, obviously right. I've taken time off for injuries, taken time off, gets in the way occasionally, but I didn't become, not, I mean, some of this is donuts, certainly, but I didn't become a 240-pound guy that can bench press close to 400 through pills, that's for sure. You know, it, one of my favorite jokes in a movie that came out recently was that Central Intelligence movie with, like, The Rock and Kevin Hart. And Kevin Hart was like, man, you know, you used to be such a fat piece of shit, and now look at you, you're The Rock. You know, how'd you do that? And he's like, I just did one thing, man. I worked out for 4 hours a day, every day, for 16 years. You know? And, like, the fact of the matter is, there's no such thing as a magic pill or powder that's going to replace hard work. But the reason why it's become such a problem is because the FDA doesn't regulate supplements. They're marketed a lot of times almost as though they're a medicine. You know, they resemble prescription bottles a lot of times. The packaging will go one of two ways. It'll either be like extreme with like lots of big letters and exclamation points, or it'll look like a prescription medicine bottle. And the idea in either regard is to like get those synapses in your brain firing that make you think this is going to work. Either it's going to work because it says right there it's cutting-edge technology, or it's going to work because, look, it looks just like something a doctor would give me. In reality, it's neither. Because the FDA doesn't regulate supplements, as long as it doesn't kill anybody, they can put whatever they want in there and then tell you whatever they want is in it. A good example being protein. You know, some supplements, in my opinion, are just bunk from beginning to end. Some supplements have a legitimate use. Protein is one of them. You know, it's tough to get enough protein into your diet to build mass. Right, so protein shakes are a great way to supplement that. But if you look at third-party lab analysis of a lot of the big protein supplements on the market, you're not getting what they claim you're getting on the package. You know, they'll go through and they'll tear through everything in the package and they'll determine exactly what it is that's in there. And a lot of times it'll be 60% protein, 40% protein. We're not talking about, you know, some shady tub of something that you buy out of the back of a van. We're talking about the stuff you buy on base, the stuff you get at GNC. This is not only mass marketed and not only appears to be entirely on the level, but it couldn't be further from the truth. It's not a matter of, you know, it's pretty close to what they claim. A lot of times it's a matter of they're selling you corn flour for $60 a ton. And this is the reason why I get really pissed off at supplements. You know? There are, however, all of that said, my whole spiel about how bad supplements are, there are good ones out there. You know, whenever you talk supplements, you're going to end up with somebody emailing or calling or commenting about how I've been taking this powder rhino horn since I was 12 and it's, you know, made me the biggest, strongest guy in the world. People tend to believe in their own bullshit. Don't trust a supplement without a scientific basis for it. And if they try to dazzle you with scientific terms that you don't know, it's usually because it's bullshit. You know, do some Google research. There are a lot of websites. Labdoor.com is a great example of a website that does a third-party analysis of the supplements you're buying and tells you exactly what you're getting in it. You know, there's three things I can tell you work for sure: protein, creatine, and caffeine. Those are three supplements that you really need, provided you're getting them for real. There are other ones out there. Branched-chain amino acids, a lot of people swear by. There's been some controversy in the fitness world about them recently. There's a lot of other things, green tea extract and fish oil. There's a million things out there people swear by. There's not a lot of science to support all of it, you know?
So wait a minute. Go back to the things that you said work, no doubt work. What are they?
Well, for me personally, the ones I swear by are protein, whey protein.
Right.
Although, if you've got problems with whey because you've got problems with dairy, there's soy-based protein that you can use. Soy-based protein may well be just as good as any other. I have very little experience with it. I'm a meat eater, you know.
Okay.
So protein's great. Creatine is another good one. However, there's an asterisk after creatine. It really will only do you any good if you use it properly. So the way creatine works is one of the primary ways that creatine functions is by making you store more water in your muscle fiber. And what that does is it delays that burning of the buildup of lactic acid in your muscle. You know, as you're working them, they start to burn, they start to feel tired. Creatine can help stave that feeling off just a little bit, which will allow you to get one more rep in, two more reps in. Now, if you're not working out that way, if you have a very regimented, I'm going to do 4 sets of 10 with this weight, creatine may not be the best supplement for you, because you have to bear in mind that they put a bunch of sugar and shit in the creatine for it to be palatable. So when you drink it, assuming that you're not just getting the pure creatine, you're taking in a whole bunch of calories, you know? And if you're not using the creatine effectively, all you're really doing is taking in a whole bunch of extra calories, you know?
Right.
And then the last one, caffeine. People lose sight of the fact that caffeine is very much a fitness supplement. When you hear about guys taking pre-workout, you know, NO Explode, Jack 3D, things like this, the primary functional ingredient in those pre-workout supplements is caffeine. They'll tell you they've got green tea extract and other shit that's like special herbal remedies from the Orient. It's all a bunch of bullshit. For the most part, what you're getting when you down some NO Explode, you're drinking 3 cups of coffee. And that's why you're fucking wired after to go work out. You have to remember with pre-workouts, however, just like drinking a ton of coffee, the more you take in, the less effective it's going to be for you in the long term. Right? So if you start every day with 6 cups of coffee, you're going to find pretty soon that you can have a cup of coffee before bed with very little effect, right? Same thing with a pre-workout. If you start every workout with 2 scoops of Jack 3D, you're going to find pretty soon that those 2 scoops of Jack 3D don't really get you up and going the way they used to, you know? So what you mean with your taking, it's a pretty common sense approach. The problem is the marketing surrounding supplements is intentionally misleading. You know, and then when you add to that, what's the shortest route between me and my goal, right?
Good.
If that is buying $300 worth of powder, I'll buy those $300 worth of powder. But, you know, it's easy to convince ourselves that it'll work because you watch these advertisements. I used to know a guy who was a fitness model, and he was featured in a lot of HydroxyCut commercials. You know, and I remember asking him once, do you even take HydroxyCut? And he was like, no. Like, I take steroids, man. Like, it's an investment in my future. I've only got so many years where my body can look like this. I need to make as much money while I can as I can. So, yeah, man, he was taking Diebold on the on-cycle and then Winstrol on the off-cycle. So he was a big, huge dude with no body fat selling you HydroxyCut that he never took.
That's awesome. This is the way
the supplement world works.
I think we call that capitalism, right?
You know, there's truth to that. But that's the reason why you'll see the FDA step in on products like HydroxyCut occasionally, because some guy will be like, well, shit, if taking one before breakfast will help me lose weight, taking 30 will make me skinny, right? The guy will take 30 caffeine pills and drop dead, and then the FDA steps in and says, you need to adjust your formula. They'll adjust the formula slightly, re-release it as a new repackaged, new and improved HydroxyCut premium, put it back on the shelves and sell it to you again. It's still a caffeine pill. They sprinkle different herbal bullshit in it. You know, the supplement industry in and of itself is a predatory industry. That doesn't mean that there aren't good ones out there. You just got to be really smart about the way you pursue them.
You know, I saw a study, and this is why this kind of has been in my head. I saw a study, I don't know who did it, but they said, you know what, all those vitamins you're taking, they're not doing you any good.
Fact. That is true.
And it made me laugh, like, what? I thought,
well, vitamins you're supposed to take them.
Like, this has 200% of the RDA of all these things in it. This multivitamin that men over 50 take. Yeah, let's
now
do it.
Now tell me this. What the hell do you need 200% of anything for?
So I can piss it out. Of course. What a stupid question.
You see what I'm saying? But like, when you're looking at vitamins, are another great example of somebody selling you something based on your perceptions of needing it. Now, if a multivitamin was integral to your survival, someone would prescribe it to you, right? Now, there are definitely people who go to the doctor and find out that they have vitamin deficiencies, you know? And when you have a vitamin deficiency, a vitamin that you take orally can be a great way to supplement that to get you back on track. But for the most part, for most of us, walking around in our regular everyday lives, eating normal, regular human food, more than once a day, more often than not, right? You don't need some multivitamin that gives you 300% of 30 different things. The reason why you're still alive today, 30 years, 50 years after you were born without ever having taken a multivitamin, is because it turns out it's not really that integral to your survival. You know? Now, that's not to say that there aren't benefits to some vitamins for some people, but when we're looking at fitness, you have to be really reluctant to accept broad stroke things like that. Everybody should take a multivitamin. Not true, you know? Everybody's going to respond the same way to creatine. Not true. You know, so it's important that you not only do some research, do a little bit of Googling, but also give yourself a chance to respond to something, you know? When you start taking a new supplement, you have to get past that self-induced placebo effect, where you spend $80 on this tub of bullshit, so you're going to make it work. You know, I mean, we've all been there. I've certainly been there, where I spent $100 on some bottle of pills that promised to make me better. So I started taking it, and I started working out much harder because I'm invested now. You know,
What you're telling me is you're. It has nothing to do with the powder. I just changed the way I worked out, and I changed my diet a little bit to maximize the powder, and therein lies the secret. Nice.
Because you'll go on, bodybuilding.com is a great website. There's a lot of really good resources on there. One of the things you'll find on that website, though, is, it's kind of like a workout Facebook. It's called Body Space, right? And what you can do is you can go look at a guy's profile or a girl's profile and see, well, look at the shape that he's in. Look at the shape that she's in. Here's the list of supplements that they take, and then they rate those supplements, right? And when you look at it, you'll go, oh, my God, look at it. Here's a good example. I like AminoLean as a pre-workout supplement. I've had good experiences with it. So let's say you look at my page, not that I have one, but if I did, and you see, that guy's taking AminoLean. Alex looks like he's in pretty good shape. I'd like to get big like that. I'll try taking AminoLean, too. The thing that you don't realize is that there are a lot of variables in play here. Number one, he might have just been a big dude to start with and then started taking AminoLean a month ago. You know? And number two, you don't know what else he's doing in his regimen. I might be taking AminoLean and that's why my body's down. But I also might be eating a very strictly regimented diet.
Right.
You can't see that, you know? So you see these things, but the worst of it all is that guy spent money on that powder. He's not going to tell you he's an idiot.
Right. Right. No, no doubt.
You know?
He's going to attribute it to the powder. No, I've got an email.
Know? And it's I'm all ears.
Right. Mac, interesting discussion. I once read an article about what Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, eats and his workouts and how crazy he is about it in terms of having it put into contracts, personal appearance, contracts and movie contracts. He's a maniac. He's a maniac about it, which I guess makes sense because it is the franchise, that body of his and the People's Eyebrow. Let me tell you, the People's Eyebrow is awesome if you've never seen it. If you smell what I'm cooking. So The Rock, Alex, you've seen his list of, you know, the food that he eats on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
His workouts, I mean, you look at Dwayne Johnson, it's like, okay, I get it. That's how that happens.
Yeah.
That's how that happens.
But, you know, the reader hit the nail on the head in that it's his franchise, right? That's the reason why he's got it written into his riders. If you're bringing Dwayne Johnson in for something, you have to give him a place to work out. Because if Dwayne Johnson stops working out, he stops being Dwayne Johnson. He goes back to being the guy that was in that Tooth Fairy movie, you know, 20 years ago or whatever it was. You know, Dwayne Johnson is deltoids. You know, you don't hire Dwayne Johnson to not bring triceps into the picture. Right? So you got to assume. But that's a perfect example of Dwayne Johnson's regimen. I'm sure he does do some form of supplementation.
Right.
But he eats 18 times a day.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's how you beat Dwayne Johnson. Right. You work out consistently.
Right.
And then he came times a day.
Here's a text message for you. This guy is great. He reminded me that I think I dropped over $2,000 in amino acids between my second lieutenant and first lieutenant years in 29 Palms. What an idiot.
That's what I was listening to, buddy.
What an idiot. And you know what? And that stuff's not cheap either.
You know, when I was in 29 Palms, they always said, when you're stationed here, you're going to either start working out hard, you're going to get really into religion, or you're going to become an alcoholic. I picked my two favorite ones. I started working out hard and became an alcoholic. It's carried me through straight to this day. but it was 29 pounds that turned me from 150-pound PFC that could only get 7 pull-ups to, by the time I left, you know, I was a 220-pound corporal with my brown belt and McNabb that I could do pull-ups all day. To this day, I could still hop on a bar and knock out 20 pull-ups through muscle memory. I don't even think that's a muscle thing.
You could do it today. You know, you think you do it more out of fear?
I could, yeah, maybe. You know, that's fair. I think, you know, pull-ups, in my opinion, are a lot about rhythm. There's a lot of rhythm.
No, not if you have to come to a complete stop at the bottom. There is no rhythm. It's regenerating that. No.
If you come to a complete stop, you can still use a little bit of muscular elasticity.
No, stop it. That's not supposed to happen.
No kipping.
Then you're cheating. You know, why we ever stopped kipping, I don't know. Okay, when I came in the Marine Corps was only about kipping. You got that rhythm, right? And you're like, guys pumping out 30 pull-ups.
You've seen a CrossFit competition. Those guys aren't even doing pull-ups. It's just like doing the worm vertically.
Right. No, you're right.
They're just throwing limbs around everywhere. You know, that's not for me.
All right, let me ask you. You got a whole series of articles. My guest this morning from SoftRep, Alex Hollings. Alex, tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
Well, first and foremost, SoftRep.com. You know, you can always find me somewhere on that page. I write a lot. But also, if you want to look me up on Facebook, it's Alex Hollings Writer. Or I just launched an Old Man Fitness Facebook page, so that way you can get the fitness stuff without all my bullshit foreign policy analysis. And that's Facebook.com/OldManFitnessColumn. I know that's kind of a crappy URL.
That sucks. That sucks as a URL. Have you talked to
really
any like web type of people, or did you generate that on your own?
I made it on my own. You know, I have a background in some internet stuff, but man,
well,
it's been a long time ago.
You need to go to school, bro. That's not a good title for it. Okay. All right, so that's where you'll find that. All right, I'm just gonna make this up. Let's do the lightning round right now, okay? Okay, and these are things Alex has written about. Well, one thing you haven't written about, I'm curious about your take on it. The Singapore summit. Let me just give you a little bit of a preamble. A year ago, North Korea is launching ballistic missiles over Japan, right? Treating Japan's northern and southern border like a set of goalposts as they repeatedly launch ICBMs over mainland Japan. They're talking about shooting one in the vicinity of Guam. There's panics in the street of Hawaii as they do a civil defense drill that went wrong, right? It's really important they learned that you have to say, this is a drill, before you talk about incoming ballistic missiles and seeking shelter. But that was our dialogue. I had a son get ready to deploy that direction. Sat down and had a conversation about, hey, if you go to war, don't worry about getting killed, right? You can't duck in time. Lead your Marines. If you die, you'll die. If you live, you'll live. It's out of your hands, okay? So that's what
I agree with that.
Right? I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, we'd all like to think it's a matter of skill. It's and sometimes on a given occasion it might be. But over the course of a longer haul, it's luck. Why does he live and he die? Luck. Anyway, so you have those conversations, and that's the general. Now the conversation is much different, right? I'm curious your take on the whole Singapore summit thing.
Well, first and foremost, I think that you found a lot of people after the fact, even once it looked like it was going to happen for sure. If you want to be anti-Trump, it's really easy to just pick an angle that is anti-Trump. So all the same people who were chanting that Trump was leading us to nuclear war are now chanting that Trump is legitimizing a despot by meeting with him, right? Now, I'm on record. I'm not particularly a fan of Donald Trump, but that doesn't mean that everything he does is the wrong thing, right? When we talk about previous presidents not meeting with Kim Jong-un, previous presidents weren't dealing with an active nuclear North Korea. Now, mind you, they still haven't demonstrated, in my opinion, a survivable reentry vehicle. They haven't demonstrated anything even remotely resembling a targeting apparatus. There's no reason to assume that their ICBM is done, right? But we still have to acknowledge that it does represent a legitimate threat, especially because an ICBM doesn't even need to, like, An ICBM launched from North Korea could do more damage to the United States if detonated in the upper atmosphere than if it actually made landfall. You know, an EMP that knocks out power for a whole region of the country would more drastically affect a good portion of this nation than, you know, a relatively small by comparison to other ICBMs on the market. A nuclear detonation that actually hit somewhere in the West Coast, right? So we still have to...
Okay, hold on. You have to footnote that. So what you're saying is it would more drastically impact the country. Would the loss of life be similar, in your opinion?
No. It depends on where it made landfall. You know what I mean? If an ICBM landed in downtown Los Angeles, we might be talking about a bigger casualty count from actually making landfall.
Right.
But if you could knock out the power to, let's say, the entire American Southwest, you know, I think it was FEMA. Somebody, one of the government agencies, did a study 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now, that said that within 2 years of a total nationwide blackout, 90% of the American population would be at risk of death. And the reason is because we've grown so dependent on electricity that we have no means of food refrigeration. We have no supply lines. When you talk about big urban centers, there's no source of food or fresh water inside a city. Everything's got to be shipped in. Now, the thing about an electromagnetic pulse, it doesn't just knock out the electrical grid. It feasibly can overwhelm the circuitry in everything electronic. That means that your car doesn't start not because the battery's dead, but because all of the circuitry is fried. It bursts the circuit, right? So we're talking about a complete collapse of infrastructure. So immediately, anybody who's reliant on electricity for survival, we're talking about people in hospitals, older folks in very hot places that need the air conditioning to keep, you know, their environment survivable. Early on, the weak folks will die quickly.
How about water pumping stations that require electricity to pump water out of wells into your home? And they get fried.
And what you've got to remember about these EMPs, again, because it renders the circuitry inert, it's not a matter of fixing this infrastructure. The infrastructure at this point is, for the most part, there would certainly be elements that survived, but for the most part, the infrastructure would be gone. You know, so we're looking at Puerto Rico right now, Puerto Rico only got hit by a hurricane,
right?
Not an EMP. You know, and people in Puerto Rico are still living in very dire straits. Now, just imagine if it wasn't just the power lines that you had to replace. It was literally the every bit of infrastructure from the ground up. We're talking about, I mean, decades at best for recovery, you know? So when you think in terms of that, you can't dismiss the nuclear threat to North Korea just because it doesn't seem as though their ICBMs could make landfall. They don't need to make landfall to really, really hurt the United States.
Got it.
You know?
Okay. So with all that said, this is the lightning round, okay?
Oh, I'm going too slow then.
Do you understand the concept of the lightning round, or do I have to? Come on. Have you never? I don't know who does the lightning round.
You get me riled up talking about ICBMs.
No, I screwed it up because I asked you to footnote it. So my bad. So with all that said, what do you think?
Honestly, I'm not a big fan of calling off military exercises because that was always intended to be a conventional deterrent, not a nuclear deterrent.
Right.
We were not doing war games on the Korean Peninsula because of nukes.
But we can turn that back on. They're still going to plan. They're still going to do everything, and it would take this phone call. Hey, Alex, this is Mac.
You're 100% right.
Hey, sir.
Here's the real truth.
Hey, sir,
about
what's
that
up?
Korean summit.
We're going the exercise. Begin to move the logistics according to timeline. This, and there will be a date, right? There'll be a date that once you get inside that date, you would have to slide the exercise to the right. But there's a go date for the exercise.
My only argument I would have about the exercises is it's important that we continue to work towards interoperability because of personnel changes that are constantly ongoing.
You know what?
However,
without a doubt, but we can do that all year round. I mean, we have,
absolutely,
you know, we have a ton of people.
Know?
We have other exercises. We have RIMPAC. We have other things that we can do.
No.
You know, so to
all
me,
that said,
yes.
This summit, in my opinion, relatively inconsequential in the big picture. We want it to be big. We want it to be a big news. We want it to be a big deal. Diplomacy is long, slow, and boring. What we saw in the summit was a conversation that will be the first of many conversations between high-level officials that will be the first of many high-level officials. 3 years from now, we're still going to be working on this. 10 years from now, we'll feasibly still be working on this unless it's all falling apart in future administrations or what have you.
All right.
Diplomacy is not a weekend deal. We don't solve anything in North Korea with one conversation. We don't solve anything anywhere in the world with one conversation. We're allocating a lot of weight to this because we like headlines. But in truth, this is just like, this is a baby. You know, when you say, you know, forward march, you know, left foot step off, but that's not the end of the, that's not the end of your hike, right? That's what we just did. We had a left foot step off. Now we've got a long road ahead. You know,
okay.
Headlines might make it seem like we're, this week it's nuclear war, and next week it's Nobel Peace Prize. But in truth, you know, we just, what we just saw was the first date. Whether or not these guys are going to get married is yet to be seen.
Okay. All right. Story, very prominent last week. Chinese hackers stole more than 600 gigabytes of data off a defense contractor's computer. And it, the subject matter was the Navy's Sea Dragon missile. You know, it seems like I read one of these stories on a weekly basis where somebody hacked somebody.
Man.
There was an article, I want to say that I saw over the weekend that talked about, that the U.S. Cyber Command was cleared to begin conducting more extensive offensive operations, which is kind of interesting. So talk to me about the Chinese hackers and give us your thoughts on that.
Well, first and foremost, we're losing sight of how dangerous cybersecurity really is. Because it's not kinetic.
Who's losing sight? I'm not losing sight of it.
Well, here's a great example.
Okay.
The Russian government infiltrated the U.S. power grid months ago.
Right.
I think it was January or February.
Right.
You know, the Trump administration has slapped sanctions on them twice for it during that same period of time. It's nowhere near front page news anywhere that you go other than Safra. You know, front page news is which porn star President Trump may have banged at some point, or whether or not Nancy Pelosi has said this thing or that thing. We're not talking at all about, you know, China once again hacking into our defense infrastructure, stealing a bunch of data. I mean, China's J-20 is a copy of an S-22. That's not hyperbole. We have the guy in jail who gave them the plans. He also gave them plans for the F-35. Surprise, surprise, China's J-31 looks awfully like the F-35. You know, this is a real, legitimate threat. World War III, in my opinion, is more likely to start on the Internet than anywhere else. We've gotten really good at mitigating kinetic endeavors. We're going to go have a proxy war. We want to kill some Russians. We'll do it in Syria. You know, however, one of these days, one of these cyber attacks is going to be so significant that it's going to cross over that threat bar where we have to respond kinetically. You know, and
give me an example. So somebody conducts an attack inside the United States, and what happens that would prompt us to conduct a kinetic attack?
Well, here's a great example.
Okay.
So the American power grid is
okay. Remember this. Remember this is the lightning round. Okay, we've got one
lightning
more.
Round. Okay, I'll go quick. So it's huge and complicated, but you would really only need to attack maybe 24 or so locations to really interfere with America's ability to produce electricity. And bear in mind, most military installations, intelligence agencies, and law enforcement apparatus all rely on commercial power. It would not take much to really interfere with our ability to conduct day-to-day functions.
Okay.
And if a country like, let's say, Russia, turned the power off to 80% of the country, how else do you respond? We would be nearly crippled domestically.
You don't make a strongly worded statement and go to the UN and say this is not right, and then.
If you ask me, when kids start dying, I'm done making strongly worded statements. You know what I mean? The minute that American lives here on U.S. soil are lost because of an attack, I would have a real tough time arguing that what we need to do is place sanctions.
All right.
You know?
All right.
But again, this is a conversation that we'll have to have in the near future. I really think so.
Okay.
Would you
agree with me that if your son or daughter is computer inclined, dropping the hint consistently that, you know, cyber defense technology is really interesting. I think you ought to take a look at it. Do you think that's good or bad career advice?
I would argue it's probably good career advice because barring an apocalypse, which Lord knows, I mean, that could happen.
Don't.
I wonder this whole time about my daughter, what world it is that she'll be an adult in.
Right.
Will she be an adult in this futurescape that we imagine? When we were kids, we imagined the future would be like flying cars and shiny things. But now we tend to imagine the future with a pretty bleak outlook. You know, like, so I wonder, is she going to get the future that you see in Blade Runner, where everything's dark and shitty, or is she going to get the future that we saw in Back to the Future 2? You know, I couldn't tell you, but I will say this. I want her to be prepared either way. You know, I would argue that professionally, cybersecurity is going to be a growing field in the future. However, it's delicate when you talk about that, because just like me trying to work the goddamn internet, it changes so fast. You know, my dad graduated college with a degree in computer programming that he used punch cards.
Right.
You know? 3 years after he graduated with that degree, punch cards were no longer in use.
Right.
Yeah, he's got a degree in computer programming, but what good is it now?
Right.
So, you know, that's tough, but I would say yes.
It looks good on a resume, though. I mean,
absolutely, yeah.
For anybody who doesn't know what appears underneath it, it's like, yeah, he's got a degree in computer engineering. Does it say what systems and... No, should I look at that? Yeah, you might want to.
As a guy with a degree in communications, it's a lot more valuable than being like, he's very good at liberal arts.
The commandant gave a speech at the Naval War College last week. Actually, if you haven't listened to it, listen to it.
You know, somebody actually wrote on my page that they were listening to your show, and the commandant had some stuff to say about the F-35. I haven't listened to it yet, but you're going to cross over and listen. There's somebody from...
That's awesome, because that's exactly what I'm going to say. He talked about, he said, let me explain the F-35. The F-35 links the battlefield together. Okay, so the F-35 goes into action, and it is linking all these other shooters and all these other systems. The F-35 might not even be used as a shooter on a given mission, but it's linking all these other systems together. And he started to kind of levitate and go Star Wars. I was like, whoa, Neller, get a grip.
I'm reluctant to buy it, though, because we're talking about, this isn't a guy who's in charge of selling the F-35 to us. Absolutely not.
Right.
But this is a guy who's stuck with it.
Right.
You know, the F-35, I'm not saying that I don't like the F-35. I'd really like to see it start fulfilling more promises. But the F-35 could still be the future of our fighting force. But I got to whenever... So if I were
okay, so that's not the question. Quit screwing up the lightning round, man. Quit being a dope.
Oh, my bad.
I know. You're undisciplined. Anyway, so you wrote something about other military aircraft that are currently in development that are beyond the F-35. Make me smart about that.
Oh, there are some cool ones, man. I mean, sixth-generation fighters have been in development since 2012 as far as conversational pieces go. But, you know, what makes a fifth-generation fighter a fifth-generation fighter? Stealth capabilities that are a part of the aircraft's inherent design, airframe design, and it needs to be able to travel at supersonic speed without engaging its afterburner. It's got to sustain supersonic speeds, right? So that's what separates, you know, like a Block 3 Super Hornet from an F-22 or an F-35. Sixth-generation fighters, they haven't yet designated what criteria are going to be what separates a sixth-gen from a fifth-gen, but it looks like network capabilities will be a big part of it, like you're saying with the F-35.
Right.
These sixth-gen fighters are going to be more stealth, more fast, and more networked than we've seen before. But some of the stuff that I'm more excited about are drone aircraft, like the SR-72. You know, we all know what an SR-71 is,
right?
You know, the Blackbird, it's a legend.
Right.
Still the fastest military aircraft that's ever been.
Right.
The SR-72 is a, I mean, you could say it's a stepchild of the SR-71, but really it only is in name alone, right? However, it's a drone aircraft that's supposed to have attack capabilities but also be a long-distance reconnaissance aircraft that they're using ramjet technology to achieve hypersonic speeds. You know, we keep talking about hypersonic missiles being indefensible. Now we're talking about hypersonic aircraft. Armed with munitions and able to do reconnaissance anywhere in the world. You know, to They've already been testing with the scramjet motors. Theoretically, it's supposed to be able to exceed Mach 5 and sustain those speeds. Some people say Mach 6. And depending on who you ask, Lockheed may or may not have a test bed that they're already working on this motor in the air with. There's pictures, like satellite pictures, that people claim this must be it. You know, until they say it, you know, I'm reluctant to believe it. But the SR-72 is going to be a game changer because we're not just talking about hypersonic missiles anymore. We're talking about controlled airframes with munitions, with offensive and defensive capabilities that are able to travel at these speeds that we're talking like ICBM reentry speeds. You know, that's going to be a foundational shift in the way that we conduct warfare, I really think. We're not going to have to worry as much about putting a carrier strike group within 300 miles of a target. You know, the B-21 Raider, that's coming out pretty soon, it's going to replace both the B-1B Lancer and the B-2 Stryker. That's another one of these aircraft that we're talking about being a global strike platform. However, I'm not sure the B-21 is even going to be supersonic, let alone hypersonic. So, you know, when we're talking about speed, the SR-72 is really the thing to look out for. It's going to be an awesome aircraft. But, man, there's a bunch of other ones, too. When we're talking about competitors, the Su-57 is a good example. That's Russia's inbound fifth-generation aircraft that they claim will be a competitor for something like the F-35. It being a Su-57 means it will inherently be faster and more maneuverable than an F-35. Theoretically, it'll be less stealthy, and the F-35 will have a longer visibility range. But, you know, until I start seeing the F-35 doing this shit that they keep claiming it'll do, I'm reluctant to say that a bigger, fatter, slower aircraft is the superior fighter in the battlefield. I want to see it actually successfully engage a stealth-capable enemy fighter from over the horizon before I'm going to say the F-35 is the biggest, fattest plane around. Because the J-20 and the Su-57, in my opinion, with visibility, probably takes an F-35 down every time. I hope I'm wrong, but I haven't seen anything to indicate otherwise. That was a whole lot for a lightning round.
You know what? You suck at lightning round.
I tell you, man, you know what it is? I sit around reading this stuff all day. I'm just like, man, I want to get it out loud. I want to get everybody to hear it. You know? I don't know why everybody's not talking about the SR-72. How cool is that?
You know what? That is cool. We all grew up on the SR-71. And if you've ever seen it, I remember being on Okinawa and watching it land. And we were out playing softball. And all of a sudden this thing comes like over, and then we stop and we all look up like, holy shit, man, what is that? And the wingspan is ginormous, you know, and you look up and you're like, oh my God, that's what that is? And, so you'd see it on occasion landing at Kadena, coming over, Camp Hansen on Okinawa. That's the first place I saw the C-17.
C-17s, when you see a formation of them fly overhead, it seems like the end of the world.
Well, you know,
it's the beginning of independence.
Yeah, it looks like a building flying through the air. It's like, how is that building flying through the air? And it is. All right. First of all, happy Father's Day.
Thanks, man. And to you too, for real.
No. And thanks for coming on. Tell everybody where they find your work and what are you writing about this week?
Definitely go to softrep.com. You'll find my work and the work of a bunch of other great writers. If you want to find me on Facebook, facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter, or just search Old Man Fitness on there. You'll find me that way too. On Twitter, you can also find me at AlexHollings52. And this week I'm writing about all kinds of stuff, man. I've got an article I just wrote about the Soviets and the Russian cosmonauts carried a 3-barreled shotgun rifle flare gun combination with a machete buttstock. Up until 2007, they carried this with them into orbit. So I got an article about that coming out. I've got an article about, I've been making knives. I know, it's crazy, man. I've got an article about the value of getting your hands dirty, that will probably be coming out today or tomorrow. There's a bunch of stuff. Go to softrep.com, look for my name, you'll find it.
There it is. Are you still senior writer? Oh, before you leave, what's this TV thing you got going on?
Stuff goes. I'm supposed to be tight-lipped about it, but you know, I flew to New York City from my little house in the woods of Georgia last week and filmed a pilot for a TV show that feasibly will one day air on the Spec Ops channel. You know, it's got a make its way through a bunch of editors and bosses and let them decide whether or not they think it was worth it. But I've got some other TV stuff coming up this summer, too, so chances are good you guys are going to have to see my face on TV at some point.
Unbelievable.
I have a face for writing, so it'll be a short-lived career.
man.
Twitter,
no, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks,
stuff.
Man.
All right. No. Alex Halling, senior writers, softrep.com. You just Google his name, Alex Hollings, Hollings. You'll find his stuff. He writes good stuff. Alex, happy Father's Day. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks, brother. Always glad to be on.
All right, bud. Have a good one. See ya. There you have it. Alex Hollings talks so fast, man. He's like, when you, he's like typing in like 8 font. Yeah, that's how he speaks. There's a lot in an hour. You can cover more ground with Alex Hollings in an hour than you can cover with any other guest that comes on All Marine Radio. He talks fast. But it makes for good stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Michael Musselman joining us. Yeah. The Gifted One, next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.